This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Activists are plastering signposts and bike paths across Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver with stickers of the mighty Douglas fir. On a flag of green, white, and blue, the tree symbolizes the Cascadia Now movement. Maybe you've seen them. For two decades, Cascadia Now has been trying to convince residents to secede from the United States and Canada. One of the group's founding members, Paul Nelson, says Cascadia Now is spreading across the Pacific Northwest.
Right now we have about 55 different groups throughout the Northwest, groups and people active. And a lot of those people flyer and do other stuff. I would say Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, B.C. are our three biggest bases of support. And I think the thing that really sets us apart from a lot of these other movements is we're not basing our arguments in what we find wrong with the U.S. and Canada. The Cascadia movement really is based around a love for the Pacific Northwest, and we find, you know, all of these things we find really special that we would like to protect, that we would like to pass on to our children. And so it's very positive.
Sounds like Ernest Kallenbach's book, Ecotopia. But can a real-life idea for Cascadia Now succeed? How crazy is this idea? Well, David Hyde spoke with Chris Roth, an anthropologist. He focuses on separatism and micro-nationalism.
So this movement, Cascadia Now, they say that they draw their inspiration from Thomas Jefferson. What's the link to a separatist movement? It seems like he was trying to create a bigger United States.
Well, he was, but, you know, there's this intriguing quotation from a letter that he wrote to John Jacob Astor in 1813, not long after the Lewis and Clark expedition, where he referred to a free and independent Republic of the Pacific to match the East Coast Empire of the U.S. And he might have been sort of flippant or might have just been talking off the cuff. Certainly, he never pushed for anything as specific as a separate state.
What's the inspiration for the Cascadia Now movement, though, more in the present, or what's the definition of it?
Mostly, it sort of goes back to a book in 1975 by Ernst Kallenbach called Ecotopia, which told a sort of future narrative, speculative fiction, about the secession of Oregon and Washington and a big part, sort of the northern two-thirds of California, as a separate state that would be sort of radically egalitarian, very much modeled on the counterculture, ecologically engaged, recycling and so on, these things that we hadn't even heard of yet. And that sort of gave birth to this idea of bioregionalism, proposing that the boundaries between the U.S. and Canada, for example, and other international boundaries, which are drawn essentially by, which are essentially the residues of wars and treaties, don't really pertain to the communities and regional cultures that exist right now.
And you're an expert, Chris Roth, on separatist movements, not just here in the Northwest, but all over the world. How do you think the Cascadia movement or the Ecotopia idea compares to other separatist movements?
Well, one thing that makes it different from a lot of movements around the world that have quite a lot of momentum, such as places like Kurdistan and places like Scotland and places like the minority areas of Burma, is that those are areas where people feel dominated and oppressed. Cascadia is different because it's based more on an ideal. I think people living in Cascadia, as they call it, realize that they have it pretty well, but that they would like to make the world a better place, and not so much to get some specific group of people off their backs.
Yeah, but you've seen the show Portlandia. I realize it's not a documentary, but there's plenty of, I don't know if you want to call it victimhood or a sense of oppression by a dominant culture that's a part of the counterculture. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think to an extent that's true, in that the Pacific Northwest has been the sort of cradle of the counterculture when it comes to the anti-war movement during the Vietnam War. But I think that, you know, right now a lot of it has become kind of a different thing, and Portlandia kind of exemplifies that, the idea of hipsterdom almost as a kind of ethnicity. But I'm not sure that hipsters are exactly oppressed in the way that, say, Kurds or minorities in Burma are.
Chris Roth is an anthropologist. His blog is Springtime of Nations. It focuses on separatist movements. He's also got a book coming out this fall on the same topic. I guess just in terms of what's going on here, what's the case that folks who are inspired by this make to say that people in Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia even really want to join this and want to secede?
In point of fact, I'm not sure that very many people actually do seriously want to secede. And I think that if there were actually some sort of binding referendum, I think a lot of people would get cold feet before pulling the lever and deciding to actually split with the United States.
In 2011, though, Time magazine put the Republic of Cascadia on its list of top 10 aspiring nations. What chance do you think this has of being successful, at least in the short term?
Extremely low. I think that certainly if you take into account that the envisioned area, Oregon, Washington, D.C., includes a lot of inland areas and even some coastal areas where people are very politically conservative and very patriotic to their respective existing national governments, that just would not go for such an idea.
I'm thinking that the people behind this, you know, they see the same information that you see. They're aware of that. So if it has such so little chance of actually succeeding, why create a movement around this idea?
Well, one reason might be to raise awareness of issues so that advances can be made on other fronts at the policy level, to organize in ways that can be used to create other kind of grassroots political movements. And also, I think it's, even though the chances of success right now are incredibly small, planting the seed of the idea of secession or an independent state can have far-reaching effects. To take an example, if a year ago you had asked people in eastern Ukraine about the possibility of creating a separate state for Russian speakers, I think most people would have dismissed it as crazy because there just wasn't the impetus. Now, I don't think anything like that is likely to happen anytime soon in North America, but I think that, and you find this on the very far left and on the very far right in the United States, a lot of people have some sort of apocalyptic ideas about where America might be heading and are sort of hedging their bets by thinking of alternatives in case there's some sort of reordering of the power structure that has to occur.
So the point is, nations aren't forever. It's possible that in 50 or 100 years, something like this could actually come about.
It's possible. 50 years is a long time in politics, as you can see when you look at, for example, the history of Europe.
Chris Roth, thank you so much for taking the time.
Pleasure to do it.
Chris Roth, an anthropologist who focuses on separatism and micronationalism. He spoke to KUOW's David Hyde. This is The Record.